La 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 la. Hello everybody and welcome back to Ready Set Stream, Gilmore Girls Edition. We are actually recording this on July the 4th in the wee hours of the morning on July the 4th. So we wanted to wish everyone in America and anyone else who actually celebrates it a happy Independence Day.
I would second that.
Absolutely.
Yes, and I want to let everybody know out there, if you would be gracious enough to rate, like, subscribe, share, comment. And where we lead, you can follow us. The link is below. Did I cover all the bases there, love?
Well, we do have a new Instagram account. So it is in the description, too, so they can follow us there on Instagram. And our email that I mention every episode, which I'm going to stop mentioning, is also in the description below.
Well, I stand corrected.
Yes.
All right, before we get started, we have a hostile streamer update for you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Our son has actually been listening to our podcast.
Yes.
And although he finds us more entertaining than the Gilmore Girls show, that's a direct quote, he is recalling a lot of the scenes. Apparently, his employer is a huge fan of him, would have it on constantly in the background.
Go employer.
Yes.
All right.
Kudos to her.
Or him. I don't know.
Remember what he said. So, by the power of osmosis, he absorbed a great deal of the show. As we always say, the first step in a crisis is admitting you have the problem.
Right.
Will he start watching with us? That's to be determined.
Yes, it is. And funny enough, though, too, if he's only absorbing bits and pieces, then he hasn't really experienced watching it.
No, not at all.
Not really.
He hasn't been immersed in the Gilmore Girls experience.
Absolutely. So he still has to go over that hump and start being a viewer.
Yes. We need you guys' help. We need you to continue to pray for him and send in those tips to help us help them. Help us, you know.
Yeah. And I have an actual update for our hostile streamers as well.
Okay.
I was talking with my daughter on the phone today, and I just happened to casually drop into the conversation that, you know, Mark and I made a podcast. And she agreed to listen to the first episode of our podcast.
Really?
Yes, she did.
Gilmore Girls?
Well, the thing about it is, though, is that she told me that I could even quiz her to determine if she truly listened to it, but she doesn't realize what it's about.
So you did a little bit of tricking of your own.
Yeah, a little bit.
I want to hear that conversation.
You know how this is. I would love to be a fly on the wall when she
maybe
pulls
you could
up
record
her.
That for me,
dude. I would love to be a fly on the wall when she pulls up our podcast,
the look
and
on her
she
face.
Finds out that it's about the Gilmore Girls show, and oh, the eye rolling that there would be. And yeah, it would be fun to see.
Yeah,
I wish I could record
would be
that
awesome
and replay it. It would be
would
be too good.
You made mention last episode that Lauren Graham, who plays Lorelai, was on a Seinfeld episode.
I did mention that.
And
neither of us could remember.
Well, I was kind of beating myself up about that because I'm a huge Seinfeld fan.
And as am I.
So I went a Gilmoring.
And, you Gilmore.
Yes, and it was season 8, episode 20 on Seinfeld, the Millennial. And she played Valerie. And it was the speed dial episode.
Oh my gosh!
If you remember
that episode.
Yeah, as soon as I saw it, I was like, you know, Total Recall.
That's the one where the girl she has a big issue about people being on your speed dial and
positions. It's like
the
rating system.
He
was at pole position number 7. He got moved to 9 after a bad date, and he's like, "Well, how do I get moved up?" And so he had to prove himself worthy, and lo and behold, he found himself on number 1. He was like, "I'm number 1."
Ooh. Yeah, yeah.
But so he goes to pick her up, and the stepmother gets in the car, and she's like, "Hello, Jerome." And she's like, "We need to talk about your position, because I used to be number 1. So they have this funny three-way call where you take him off, you put me back. Okay. And then she gets with him later and says, "I'll just move you to one of the emergency contacts." So by the end of the show, she gets poisoned somehow. I think she ate some tainted Kramer, put something in the clothing thing at one of them stores. Uh-huh. Anyway, so she's sitting there dying, and Valerie picks up the phone to call poison control. And who answers the phone?
Jerry Seinfeld.
Jerry Seinfeld. And he's like, that's even better than number one. And she gets flustered and hangs up on him. So that's how that show ended. It was great.
I love that both she and Scott Patterson had an episode on Seinfeld. That was just kind of a neat connection.
Yes.
Not the same episode, but still, they were both on that same show. That's at awesome. One point. Yeah, that is cool. So, Mark and I received an email from... What? Yes.
We actually got one?
We got
one. It's like
mail.
Ghostbuster. We got one.
Yeah, we got one. From
finally.
From Casey in North Carolina. And here, Mark, you just read
it. You want me to read it?
Yep.
All right, I'll read it. Casey says, I really enjoy your show. You guys are hilarious.
Oh, Lord.
I love the way you relate.
We're putting the comedy routine on the road in a couple of months.
Maybe.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
She says, I love the way you relate to the show, to your personal lives, and get deep from time to time. Yeah, we tend to do that.
We do tend to do that.
Also, how you break down each episode scene by scene, as well as character profiles. I would like for you to rate each episode just as a suggestion.
That's actually something we've been discussing.
Yeah, well,
before we
might get to that later.
Yeah.
My question for you guys is, who is your favorite character and why? Shannon?
Ooh, that is a tough question. It is honestly between three or four to me. I want to say, okay, I'll tell you who I want to say. They're not going to be the favorite, but I do want to say, I wish I could pick Luke because I love that he's so steadfast. He's so, what you see is what you get. I just love his personality. I would also want to say Michelle just because he's so funny and his rudeness and sarcasm are just, I love that about him.
Right.
I want to say Paris because even though she's kind of the girl that you love to hate during this season and other seasons as well, you kind of, as over the course of the show, you get to know her background and she kind of becomes a redeemable villain in a way. And
yeah, I'd say that.
I really love her little rants, but if I have to pick absolute favorite, I have to go with Lorelai. I just have to.
Okay.
And the reason I'm going with Lorelai, it's not a woman thing. It's just that she's the person on the show that I relate to the most. I love her wit. I love her humor and sarcasm. I love the fact that she's very self-aware, very confident. She is willing to admit that she's wrong when she's wrong, and it doesn't take her that long to do it. There are a couple of instances in later seasons where it does take her a little bit longer to learn the lesson, but for the most part, in general, she's very good at it, and I admire that about her. So, and I think she's a good mother.
Okay, it's a little bit complicated for you there.
It was. I wanted to pick all of them.
Yeah, see, well, we can't do that. There can be only one.
There can be only
one. As Highlander says. Well, mine might surprise you. And I know you're thinking Suki. But no, it's not.
You're not going to pick Suki?
No.
Okay, well then.
I relate more to Luke on a personal level, but I'd have to say that Kurt, for pure entertainment value.
Whom we have not met yet.
Yes. Well, she asked who my favorite was. And his reactions and nothing phases him attitude, the man child, all the different jobs, his
pure entertainment value.
Trying not to be funny, but funny. And the situations he's in. It adds to the show.
The pure entertainment value.
It's enjoyment for me.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So mine was a little short and sweet there.
Yours was short and sweet compared to my novelette
You went on and on. I mean, you waxed poetic.
Yes, I did. I had a monologue.
All right, so we want to get into it.
All right, so this is...
Oh, I wanted to thank Casey.
Oh, yeah,
we
definitely.
We really do appreciate that.
Our first letter, thank you so much for taking the time.
You'll have a place in our heart forever.
Yes, absolutely. Our very first write-in.
We really
thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Okay, so this is Gilmore Girls Season 1, Episode 4, titled The Deer Hunters, which I thought when I first heard that, I was like, oh, okay. But then it does, of course, become quite clear later on. And I'm going to keep on with that quiet. I can't get rid of it now.
Quiet.
From the last episode that we watched. Oh my gosh.
You've been doing that a lot lately.
I have, yes. I can't get rid of it.
It's quite
so
annoying.
It is quite annoying. It annoys me because I'm noticing it. So this episode starts out where Lorelai and Rory are going into a grocery store. And, you know, Scott Patterson mentioned this this on his show, and I'm going to mention it here as well because I think it's noteworthy. It is not mentioned as Dozie's Market or Dozie's Grocery Store in any way. You don't know that it's Dozie's. Taylor Dozie has not even been introduced.
We don't even know who owns it.
Right.
So, but it's a mystery grocery store.
Yes, it is a mystery grocery store during this episode, but it just looks and feels exactly like the grocery store that we know.
It almost reminds you of like a Kinko's because it had all these supplies.
Well, it had groceries. It always had,
you know, it had more supplies than anything.
But we do meet Taylor Dozie here shortly, and I think in a few episodes, and it does eventually become Taylor's grocery store. Now, Scott Patterson was kind of iffy. He thinks it becomes Taylor's, but he said, I'm sure that if we're wrong, there were going to be 500,000 fans that will write in and say, you are so wrong about this.
Super fans.
Yeah, yes. Super fans. And we may have the same things. So forgive us if we're wrong, but
you think you're one. I know I'm not one. So
yeah, well, we may be wrong, but I think that is going to end up being Taylor Dozie's Market. But I digress. So they're picking out school supplies for Rory, and of course Lorelai immediately reaches for a purple legal pad. And Rory's like, no, I need serious paper. You know, this is Chilton. I'm like, okay. And Lorelai's like, paper's paper.
I'm on Lorelai's side here. I feel like another Seinfeld. What's the deal with school supplies?
Right, you know? Yeah. What is just, the deal with just school pick supplies?
One. Just pick some. They're all, you know, the same already.
So she hands Rory her boring paper.
Yeah.
That is more of a yellow legal pad. And then Rory says that she needs 3 highlighters. And of course, Lorelai's baffled by that. And she's like, you know, why do you need 3? And
how did you
arrive at the number 3? And Rory was like, one could dry up, the other one gets lost. I have one left. And I'm thinking to myself at the time, okay, this is actually so me because I'm like a little OCD that way.
Yeah, and I'm kind of like Lorelai. Highlighter's a highlighter. Get on with it. Let's pick some stuff and go already.
Yeah, so Lorelai, she really kind of
rains on her parade.
Yeah, but what I thought was so funny about the next piece of this is that Lorelai starts this funny little quips about the different supplies they're picking up. Like, okay, you got your serious paper, you got your somber highlighters, your maudlin pencils, your manic depressive pens. And she's naming all these adjectives that are all like progressively intense to the point of mental illness. And I'm like, wow, she's really going for it. And she says, these all may seem very cheerful, these little erasers, but they have lithium in them, but we already caught them trying to shove themselves in the pencil sharpener earlier. It's just, I don't know, this whole bit was just really funny to me.
Well,
it's
watching funny, that right now.
Yeah, it's funny, but it did kind of remind me of something that's going on in the world right now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Which is the mention of lithium reminded me of that Free Britney movement that's going on with Britney Spears, her leaked testimony from her court, you know, case where she mentioned that she was forced to go on lithium and taken off her old medicine and put on lithium.
Yeah,
and
you showed me some of those videos. She's always cheerful, but kind of looking off to in the distance. She's always being filmed. I tend to believe it. Years ago, that video, leave Britney alone, you know.
Yeah,
crying.
I remember that.
I kind of laughed at that, but then, I mean, at the time she needed help, but now it's getting into a sad situation.
It is, and I think about her a lot and hope that she's okay.
Lorelai mentions the post-its and staging an intervention.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And that kind of ties in
moving
with
on, she says, yeah, they may seem cheerful that we're about to stage an intervention with the neon post-its and make them give up their wacky and crazy ways. So, I mean, she's just kind of crazy. But this scene kind of reminded me of a little bit of me shopping with my mother when I was much younger. She's one of those shoppers that if you get her in a clothing store, you better be prepared to just settle down. And I would have to just kind of sit on the floor because she'll go to one of those little round racks, you know, that's got all the clothes. I should have. She'll go to one of those round racks, you know, in the stores. These department stores are full of them. And she will take every hanger and move it over and look at every single article and make her way all the way around that little round thing. And then she'll move on to the next one and do the same thing. It's like, oh my God, can we go? And yeah, I spent too many times.
Us men have a plan. We have a mission. We have a target. We go in, get it, and get out.
Well, actually, you know? That's me now. Yeah. And no offense to Mom if she's listening, but that kind of traumatized me a little bit to the point where as a woman even I don't like to shop. I love to shop online, but
going
to the store, I have an idea of what I want. I go in, I get it, I get out as quickly as possible.
I have been known to do my fair of online shopping.
Yeah. And I think we will tell that story another
day.
Yeah,
we don't have time to get into that right
now.
Yeah, no. Let's move on.
It is worthy of being brought up again in the future, though.
But Roy says something about never again, and I'm like, yeah, I'd be on that boat, too.
All right. So Roy goes to get off the bus. She gets off the bus and is carrying 5 bags to Chilton. Five bags.
She's like off and on several trips to get them off.
Yeah, she has to get off twice to get it all.
Getting off the speed bus there, you know.
And she goes into class, and this is where a new character is introduced for the first time. The character is her teacher, Max Medina, played by Scott Cohen. And we're going to get into more about him in later episodes. He is passing out everybody's recent test, and Rory is given a D.
Now, I don't like how he set her out in front of the whole class. Always.
Yeah, because he gives her her paper. He leans over, and he says, you know, just learn from this, or something like that.
Yeah, but then he goes in front of the whole class.
But he does it in front of everybody, and
she's having a hard enough time as it is.
Because the look on her face, she is absolutely devastated.
That's something he could have did in private after everybody left.
She almost looks like she's about to burst into tears. Yeah. And so, yeah, you don't want to do that, especially when you're sitting right behind Paris Geller.
Because that set up in the next scenario where she's rubbing it in her face with her minions.
Oh, exactly. So
I call them the Academia Mean Girls. Because they're all about the grades, so their status.
Yeah, absolutely. But
if you're going to work in McDonald's.
I really didn't think he should have done that. I had a teacher that set me out in geometry class in front of everybody, and she did it to a degree that I thought was actually kind of abusive.
I think we've all had teachers we can't Miss Tingle our lives.
She was like a Miss Tingle, yeah. I am telling you. She would pick one student, and that happened to be me.
Well, you'd love to just teach them a lesson like that.
Kind of. I mean, I wouldn't want her to die.
No, but she did
still. So Max, you know, goes up to the front of the class, and his parting remarks are basically, to err is human. And here at Chilton, we try to beat that humility right out of you.
Wow.
And I'm like, wow, okay. So
he takes
this
after the headmaster, don't he?
Maybe a little bit. And I'm kind of thinking, is this foreshadowing of events to come? I thought that was kind of funny. So he announces that they have a Shakespeare test this Friday, and it's going to count for like 20% of their grade, yeah. You know. And as they're all getting up to leave, we are introduced, finally we have a name for one of Paris's minions, and it is Madeline, played by what's her name?
Shelley Cole.
But
we get to talk about her.
And we're going to talk about her later.
Yeah, because she's on Luke's podcast.
But I do want to say, I think that they call her Madeline in this episode and in subsequent episodes, but if I am not mistaken, at some point down the line of seasons, they quit calling her Madeline and it becomes Madeline. I just really think I'm right about this.
You know what ticks me off about this scenario?
What's that?
With Paris and the minions. They think that because she's not smart, she's going to end up working at McDonald's, which, you know, could be true.
Well, it's not that she's not smart.
Yeah,
They are calling her not smart.
Because she got a D. But everybody else got A's and a B.
Yeah.
But this reminds me of my granddad's quote, you could have all the smarts in the world, but without common sense, you don't have anything.
That's true. Very, very true.
So don't belittle somebody because of their position in life.
Very true.
There's a lot of smart people out there.
Yeah, so Paris and her minions are gathering their stuff together, too. They're rubbing their good grades in Rory's face by talking about, what did you get? I got this, I got that. And then she starts getting up into Rory's face and says that, yeah, not everyone can be the best or someone, because as my mother says, someone always has to answer the phones. And I thought, oh my God, what a thing to say. It's just kind of like, I don't know, I just kind of took exception to that remark. One of the friends, I can't remember which one it was, says, I have no idea what you two are talking about. Paris says, but Rory does. And I thought, ooh.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Smug. So she's rubbed this in Rory's face to the nth degree, and Rory already feels like crap. So after she escapes from the minions, she immediately, of course, runs into Tristan, who starts to try to flirt with her, calls her Mary again, says he can't understand why she doesn't like him.
This reminds me of that movie, Whatever It Takes, where
Chris
tells Ryan to treat Ashley like crap, and she'll just eat it up, and you'll have her.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like first grade vibes.
Yeah.
You know, you pick on the one you like.
Yeah, that's totally what he's doing.
Yeah.
But she kind of retorts back to him about maybe it's because he can't seem to learn her name, and he just kind of chuckles that off, and he walks off and calls her Mary again as he leaves. So, yeah, he's definitely pushing those buttons. So we move over into the Independence Inn at this point. Drella is pushing her harp around and isn't watching where she's going, bumps straight into Michelle, and I will say this, I was wrong in the last episode. episode.
Yeah, I thought that was the last we saw of her.
I said that I thought that that was the last episode that featured Drella as a character, but I was wrong. This is actually the last episode.
Are we sure?
Featuring Drella, we are sure. However, I will say that as Drella, this is her last appearance, but the actress who plays her becomes another character in later seasons that will just kind of pop up periodically in certain episodes.
Would you like me to shed some light on that?
Absolutely.
Because I did some Gilmore.
I know, yes.
Yes, I did. Yes, mm-hmm. Indeedy. Well, Alex Borstein, right?
Yeah.
She was actually in...
Borstein.
Yeah, Borstein. That's right. I feel like my cousin Vinny.
He called me Rothenstein.
Yeah, well, okay.
It's Rothenstein.
So, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was in 7 episodes. She comes up later as Miss Celine.
And I was shocked to find that out.
Me too.
Now, you guys...
Y'all were probably shouting at us the whole time.
But, yeah, you know. Yeah. No, she's not.
Yeah, but actually, did you know she was supposed to play Suki in the unaired pilot?
No.
We kept saying that she was replaced by... No, she took over that role, Melissa McCarthy.
Wow, no, so, I had no clue.
So, they kind of plugged her into Drella because she couldn't get out of her contract with Mad TV. Now, I did want to mention that Mad TV, it's not everybody's cup of tea, but they did a Gilmore Girls parody. It was all about talk, talk, talk. It's funny just because we talk fast.
Yeah.
I showed it to you.
I watched it. I was offended.
Yeah. Because, well, you're a big Gilmore Girls fan.
I'm a Gilmore fan, so I hate seeing it being made fun of. But
if that's life. Your thing, if you like that kind of thing, it's okay, I guess. But, yeah, she went back to that. Actually, she was in 9 episodes.
Yeah.
And you want to know why I know this? You want to know what I found out?
Yes, please.
She was the voice of the angry Doris, Lorelai's new neighbor, Dwight.
Oh.
She was the voice of Doris on the answer machine yelling at him.
Oh, you're kidding.
She also was one of the voices in the Stars Hollow Museum, in the old Twickle
House. Oh.
Yeah.
I bet I know which one. Yeah. It had to be the wife.
So she was in 9 episodes, actually. Voices in 2.
I have to say that I was shocked to find out that she was Miss Celine, because Miss Celine is an older lady.
I didn't even recognize her.
That was around back when Marlena Dietrich was in her prime. And I'm thinking, wow, that was great makeup. And I loved Miss Celine, and I'm not so much very fond of Drella. We were kind of both shocked.
WTF on that one.
Yeah. But
speaking of voices, she also was the voice of Lois Griffin in Family Guy.
Oh, wow.
The cartoon series. She was married to Jackson, Douglas Jackson, on the show.
Oh, my gosh.
In real life.
Oh, my gosh.
Up until around 2017. Also, Jackson directed Bunheads.
Wow.
So, I'm going down the wormhole here. You know what I'm saying?
This is funny. It's a small world. All these people are connected.
Down the rabbit hole I go as I'm Gilmoring. I found out more and more, so I'm getting a little history lesson.
All these people are connected. It's crazy.
Yes. All right, let's continue.
All right, so she does bump her harp into Michelle because she is not watching where she's going. He calls her an imbecile. And she says, back up, Chevalier. And that Chevalier was a French spy, by the way, so I thought that was kind of funny that she did call him Chevalier. Yeah. But it was
insult. At least I'm not French, you know.
he says, you're fired.
Yeah.
And she says, you can't do that. He looks over at Lorelai. And he says, can I kill her? And Lorelai's like, not until after high tea.
And that's a little...
Not before high tea.
Yeah, that's a little bit of foreshadowing, because she won't be back for a while.
Yeah, it's funny. So it kind of makes you wonder, did Michelle manage to fire her since she doesn't show up for the next episode?
I think he got his way on that one.
Lorelai...
She did have an attitude. Them employees don't last very long, if you think. It was an easy write-off for them.
Yeah, that's true. Lorelai goes into the kitchen, and she's very excitedly waving a magazine around because there is a review that she wants to read to Suki. Where they had a critic come in and taste Suki's food. You know, he just came in and ordered food and then wrote up a review about the food. And before she can get to that, though, Rory comes in lugging all of her bags, and she drops them. And Lorelai says, behold, in theaters now, the thing that reads a lot.
I love that. I love that, that line. Because she drops those books.
Right. And Rory goes for chocolate immediately. So Lorelai starts to read this review to Suki. And it is a rave review. I mean, he mentions...
5 stars.
Yeah, it's a 5-star review.
But what does she hone in on?
He mentioned so many of her dishes that he tasted that were fantastic and had something great to say about all of them. And he said that he thought that the much lauded risotto is completely fine.
Perfectly
but,
fine.
But it was really the whatever it was that was the star of the show. As soon as she hears the risotto...
Is that kind of like when I tell you things are just all right?
Yes.
That's high praise for me, by the way.
I don't take it as such.
But how'd you like that movie? It's all right. How'd you like that dinner? It was all right. That's what I say.
Yeah, no.
I'll let you know if it's
that
disgusting.
Does not work. I want you to wax eloquent, dude.
No.
I want you to say, oh, that was fantastic. That was so good. Yeah,
no.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
No, I get that she's a perfectionist, and I appreciate that, but this kind of touched on my nerves. We already had this debate earlier, but I'm not going to get into this.
This is where Mark began to have some kind of...
Just scratched me a little.
It just... Yeah. But, I mean, as soon as she hears that the risotto is, quote, perfectly fine, but her face completely changes in that instant, even though the rest of the review is a rave.
You definitely relate to this. I relate to it on a smaller level.
I definitely relate to this, to what Suki is feeling right now, sure.
Nobody likes their work diminished.
Well, I'm the kind of person...
Not praised.
...that someone could say 99 wonderful things about what I've done at work, and if they have one not-so-wonderful thing to say, I'm going to hone in on the one thing.
Chew on it all.
And I will chew on it.
Yeah, you chew, absolutely. And chew, and chew. That's,
well, apparently... That's, Suki's the same way.
Yeah, we need to... I don't know how to help you. I'm like helpless about it.
You're the only one in this room and listening to us now that knows how old I am.
Yeah.
I doubt if you're going to change me at this point. On this point. No, no, no.
I can't teach you any new tricks?
No, okay. Unfortunately. I'm not that old. Wow. And I'm not a dog, but no, you can't teach me any tricks. But anyway, so Lorelai, you know, she's still all excited about it. She's not picking up on the fact that Suki has, you know, is not sharing her enthusiasm.
She's kind of clueless here.
She is a little clueless.
It's going
right
over her head.
And she's all about, I'm going to have this framed for the dining room.
Let's go out and celebrate. Yay.
And
everybody.
Suki's like, yeah, that'd be swell. Can I see that? And she grabs the magazine.
I love what Rory says at the end.
Yeah. So Lorelai suggests to Rory that they celebrate. Rory's like, I have to study. And, you know, Suki's like, I have to prep for shopping. And Lorelai's kind of like, keeps being irrepressibly cheerful to both of their disheartened attitudes.
Yeah, she's walking off.
Because both of them have the same kind of attitude. They're both just kind of down in the mouth.
And what's Rory tell her?
Rory just says, you go, girl.
It's like but I told you the last episode.
When Suki says, yeah, I gotta go prep for shopping, and she says, you go, girl. But it has no inflection in it at all. She's like, you go, girl. It's just so...
As an afterthought.
Yeah, it's just an afterthought.
They cut over to their house. And
yeah, we cut over to the house.
It's like a total role reversal again. Where she's the responsible one, and she's like all about,
well,
let's have fun.
Rory is trying to study because she's gotten a D, and her mom is making noises. She's got the news playing in the other room.
It would help
she's
if she...
She's commentating to the news, and Rory's sitting there giving her looks like, oh my God.
You know, it would really help if she was forthcoming about her D.
Yes, it would.
To stop hiding these
yes,
things.
Yes, this is the second thing.
Is this like a pattern with her?
Well, it's starting to develop into one. Remember, the first thing that we know of that she hid from her mother was meeting Dean.
Yes.
And then now she's gotten a D at school and she's hiding this.
She's got some little shady.
So she's starting to kind of hide.
Characteristics, though.
You know, they used to tell each other everything, and all of a sudden she's kind of starting to hold back a little bit.
Well, she says that later. It's coming.
Yeah, but Lorelai comes in and she's like, let's go get ice cream. And Rory's like, you know, she's totally not about it. She just wants to leave me alone and let me do what I need to do. And Lorelai's like, but I said ice cream. And Rory's like, are you four?
I did love how she bargained with her, like the parents bargained with
their
kids.
Well, we're getting there. Lorelai keeps going on and on about being hungry, and Rory's like, Lorelai, go to your room.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, this is kind of funny. Rory's negotiating. She says, if you let me study now, I'll play with you this weekend.
And just like a kid, she agrees, but then she turns right back around. Are you serious about that ice cream?
Well, yeah, she agrees to that. She starts to walk off. She turns around and she says, where did we land on the whole ice cream issue? And Rory just gets her stuff and goes goes to her room and closes the door. That's like a kid right there. You know? So, yeah, this is one of those moments where they have, like, a little role reversal. And I thought that was kind of
cute. They
do
that every now and then. They did the last episode a little bit. That becomes a thing.
So, at that point, Rory, we cut over to a place that we've not seen the inside of or at all, even, which is Kim's Antiques.
We finally get to meet Miss Kim. I kept jumping ahead in the first episode. I was like, Miss Kim?
When did we meet Miss Kim?
And then
when
I was like, Miss Kim? That's Suki.
Yeah.
That's all over the place. So, I apologize.
Rory goes to Lane's house to visit, and she comes in, and it's actually a house, but the bottom floor looks to be mainly the antique shop.
I thought it looked like Fred Sanford's.
Honestly, dude, it is cram-packed, cluttered with antiques everywhere. I mean, you can't see anything. I mean, it goes up to the ceiling almost.
Lamont was going to pop out.
They're having to play Marco Polo just for Rory to be able to find where Lane is.
I know, right?
And so she finally finds her at the kitchen table, sitting in the kitchen, and Lane is eating a rice cake, and Rory asks her, what is that? And Lane's like, 12 calories. Yes. And I thought, wow, you're so right, girl. But, I mean, I just thought that was the most hysterical thing.
We're not meant to live off that stuff, people.
And Rory,
I'm
of course. I'm
telling you right now.
No, uh-uh.
You need to go to Luke's. You know?
Yeah. Need to visit Luke's.
Get you a fat burger.
Well, Rory helps her out a little bit and hands her a Snickers bar.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, wow, yay. This is the first time that we meet Miss Kim. She comes around the corner. She's haggling with a customer, driving a very hard bargain, which gives you a perfect look at what to expect out of this character. Because she is very strict.
No nonsense. No games.
She's very strict on her daughter. They talk about her school. Rory makes the comment, Chilton is hard. And when I heard that, I thought, you know, this is a big statement coming from Rory. Because, you know, she's always kind of been told or been led to believe that she could accomplish anything. She said great, but this is kind of one of those instances where you start to see that when times get rough, Rory's maybe not quite so tough. And, you know, it kind of made me think about when my kids used to be younger and they would, you know, make the comment, well, that's not fair. And my answer was always, times are hard. You need to learn to deal. And that's kind of what I want to see Rory do here. And Lane, bless her heart, is doing her best to try to remind Rory of how good she is. You know, she's saying, you know, what do you care? You know, you've always been Miss Everything So Easy. This should be a snap for you, you know?
Yeah, the kids went through that phase. This is hard, you know? And I was always like, the mindset of Tony Little, you can do it.
You can do it.
There's always a way.
Absolutely.
You find a way.
So, yeah, I like how Lane kind of is pep talking her and kind of trying to remind her who she is, you know?
Exactly.
But around that point, Mrs. Kim comes around the corner again, and she catches, I mean, she eagle eyes immediately. She's got, like, bulldog eyes on.
You know, this reminds me of when I was a former correctional officer. She takes me back because she's like a warden.
Or
a
drill instructor.
And Rory's brought in the contraband, and Elaine's trying to sneak around get around the system.
Oh, yeah, because Rory immediately says.
It happens
says,
more often than you think.
Rory immediately says, that's mine.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, you know? That's all we had searches, you know,
uh-huh.
all the time.
But she looks basically at that bar, and Mrs. Kim says, that's chocolate-covered death. But she says it so deadpan and so serious, that's chocolate-covered death.
But doesn't Rory say, like, with a creamy caramel surprise?
She does. I thought that was a really funny comeback. Mrs. Kim doesn't say anything. She just kind of looks at her for a second, and then she leaves. So Lane tells Rory that a guy asked about her today. Who could that be? And so Rory asks.
The mysterious guy?
So Rory does ask him.
We haven't seen him in an episode.
We haven't. It's been a little bit. So Rory asks, well, who? And she said, well, that new guy. You know, tall, perfect.
Didn't know.
And he asked me where you were. I told him that you were too smart and had to go to the genius school. He really liked that. Guess he likes brainy chicks. And Rory, kind of looking not so confident and still a little shaken, her reply was, well, I'll keep my eyes open for one for him. So I thought, wow.
Yeah, she's having a bit of a pity party.
She is definitely wallowing
in it. And Lane's like pouring the coals on the fire there.
Yeah, she's trying to be upbeat, but Rory's just, like you said, she's pity party and she's down in the trenches.
She don't have that can-do attitude right now.
I think this really shook her up.
Well, that's the first real obstacle she's had in her education.
Well, that's true. Everything's always come easier for her until she got to
just
Chilton.
A snap. That's what Lane was saying.
Well, and as we know from prior episodes, she started already behind. She's trying to catch up. It didn't work. you know, and she's running into problems, and this D is a result, you know. They keep trying to pick a place where they can sit and study, and every time they start to lay their books down, Mrs. Kim comes around saying, no, move, that's Salt. So I just think Elaine's that's
like,
so funny.
I hate cells.
Yes.
And didn't they have, like, little, she had, like, little American flags, and I thought that was fitting for tonight.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I didn't, I, yeah. Now that you mentioned that, I noticed that.
It was like a, maybe it was a 4th of July, so who knows?
Right.
I don't know.
So that is the, actually, the third new character introduced on the show, if you count Madeline. Yeah. Even though we've seen Madeline, we didn't know Madeline.
Mean Girl Minion. Yeah.
Yes, but, so that's kind of three new characters that would have been introduced. Two, if we're really talking brand new. Max and then Mrs. Kim. Yeah. So I love the addition of Mrs. Kim. You'll get to know her much more over the seasons.
You'll find out just how much of a warden she really is.
Oh, good Lord, yes.
And how much contraband Lane has.
Oh, yes. Oh, good Lord.
We need to do a cell search on her.
Yeah.
Anyways.
So, from this point, we go back to the Independence Inn, and Lorelai is walking up to where Drella's playing the harp.
I think this is the last straw, because... Because she's playing Iron Man on the
harp. And Lorelai looks at her, and she says, no Black Sabbath, no Steely Dan, Boston, or Queen.
Reminds me when I was younger, I saw this documentary. This young kid ran away from home, and he was like, it's because my mom doesn't let me listen to Ozzy Osbourne. Ozzy Osbourne, man, I don't know if you ever saw that. Ozzy Osbourne, man. It's all about Ozzy Osbourne.
Wow.
And I was just, that just tickled me when I was a young kid.
That's funny. Yeah. No, I wasn't a big Ozzy listener back then, so it didn't really
affect me. I
did
listen to Sweet Leaf every now and then. That's all you know.
So Lorelai goes up into the kitchen, and what do we find but a very depressed Suki, who has her head in her hands.
Oh, God.
Or on her, she's resting her chin in her hands, and she's just kind of
looking
down. Somebody
call me a wambalant.
Oh, God.
Already?
Yeah. Starting the Suki dislike. Okay.
You gotta move on, man. You know?
So, you know, she asked.
You had a bad day. Let's recoup.
Are you going to start singing?
No.
So you had a bad day?
I already went over that.
Okay. So Lorelai is like, fresh coffee, and she sits over there, you know, so she's talking all down and out, you know, too. Her voice is down. So Lorelai goes over there, and there's no coffee, no fresh coffee. And so she says, there's no fresh coffee.
Didn't you point something out here?
Yeah, I did. Suki gets up to make her some, and even serves it to her once it's made. And I remember thinking when I saw that.
Probably she just grabs it for herself.
Why didn't Lorelai just make a pot? She was standing right there.
Was that her upbringing coming out, or was she trying to get Suki distracted and to
or
move on?
Or, a third option might be, it's Suki's job to keep coffee made.
Well,
so.
And she's falling down on the job.
She fell down on the
and
job.
And I'm the manager. Get my coffee.
Right.
So there's three options there.
Yeah. I don't know which one it truly is.
Make up your own mind.
I'm actually going to go with option three now that I've rethought it. At first, I thought it might have been the first option that you mentioned.
I'll give her a benefit of the doubt.
But the more I think about it, I think it might be the option three.
Because immediately she's like, oh, sweetie. And that's like the Southern, bless your little heart. You know what I'm saying?
Right. She's talking on and on, you know, up to Suki. She just seems kind of clueless about everybody's angst that's going on around her. There's Rory angst, there's Suki angst, and she's just kind of ignoring it and going on her Lorelai way. And she just kind of seems a little unaware in this episode. Anyway, she just starts talking
or
about
indifferent, I guess.
That or just kind of
it's flying right over her head. Definitely over her head.
But she starts talking about the parent-teacher conference that she has to go to, and she's talking and complaining about Chilton, how they send thousands of pages of updates each week. It's a very intense place. They had to have an actual vote on plaid scrunchies and different stuff. And what's funny is at the time I thought she's joking. That's just a joke she's throwing out. But later on, we'll get to it.
It's coming right up.
Uh-huh. So, I mean, she just keeps on talking about it, and she's making jokes, but Suki is just totally not reacting, and I keep waiting for Lorelai to notice, but she just keeps being clueless, and finally she asks Suki if something is wrong or what's wrong.
Yeah, what's going
and
down
Suki
here?
Finally says, he said my risotto was fine. She said fine is a word you use when someone stops you on the street that you sort of know but you don't want to talk to, so they ask you how you are and you say fine, and it's just enough so they don't have to keep talking to you because they don't want to or something like that. And she just keeps going on and on with this weird explanation of what the word fine means, and it really harkened me back to how you say fine and it bothers me.
Well, she totally took that wrong anyways, because she had some issues underlining things going on though.
Yeah, and even Lorelai says, I don't think he meant that as a slam.
No.
And she said, but this is pride. And Lorelai busts in and says, yes, you made the risotto when she lived for another 3 years.
Yeah, that's the underlying. It's more emotional.
She and Suki says, and he said it was fine.
Yeah, there's some emotional ties there that really hit her nerves. It's more than just her food. I see that. I mean, it's just more than just her cooking there. That she was insulted over.
Your issue isn't with Suki being affected by it.
Not at all.
You're more in how Suki
goes
forward with this.
I know it's the writing, but I get that. But it's how she's,
So at this
conducts
point,
herself.
Right. Thereafter is not quite such a, you're not quite such a fan of.
No.
At this point, Jackson comes in expecting an argument from Suki because that's what they do.
Yeah, he's like, don't get goofy on me. He's already making excuses for his poor produce, you know.
Right. And Suki just takes a little glance at it, says it's fine, and she leaves.
And he's
like baffled.
Dumbfounded there.
And Lorelai tells him about the risotto, and he's shocked too.
And he's like, the magic risotto?
Yes.
The life-saving risotto?
Yes.
Unbelievable.
So Lorelai just kind of whispers to him, trying to cheer her up, you know?
Yeah.
So he goes over to her, and he tries to make a couple little jokes, and she just doesn't react. She's back to sitting at the desk in the kitchen with her.
And he's like, well, do you still want this?
Hands propped on her chin.
And she's like, it's fine.
Yeah.
And it's like, what?
So at that point, we move scenes, and we are at the parent-teacher conference. Lorelai shows up late.
Yes.
At the point right before she arrives.
She does.
Right.
She wants to make a good first impression.
Well,
again.
Of course. And again, if you're important, they'll wait.
And she has the B-52 shirt on.
Yeah.
She's always dressed down.
Yeah. Well, she's got a suit on with a B-52 shirt. Yeah. It matches really, really
something
well.
I do.
Yeah. So the parents, before she arrives, though, I think this part's kind of interesting. The parents are talking about, you know, how could they get answers to the AP tests? And Max makes a joke, because it's Max's class that they're in.
Yeah.
And he makes a joke, and he says, well, I don't think you can unless you manage to bribe someone on the AP committee. And what's funny is that all of the parents kind of turn around and start looking at each other and whispering.
Can we do that?
You know that's what they're saying, even though you can't hear them.
How can we get that done?
But it's at that point that Lorelai walks in, and she comes in the door, and she immediately trips over this globe, this standing globe that Max has in his classroom. And
Was that a little attraction at first sight there? Maybe a little. I noticed she gets a little clumsy around people she likes.
That she finds attractive.
Yeah.
She did take a look at him first before she stepped forward and bumped into the globe.
There's about a couple people she does that with. A little more than others. I will just say
there is a person later on down the line in future seasons.
Wink, wink.
Wink, wink, nudge. That she is extra super clumsy around when she discovers that she likes him. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. But she trips over the globe. When she discovers what she's done, she says, what in the world?
and pats it.
Yes.
And she looks at them. Nobody's laughing.
Yeah, nobody's laughing. They're all straight faced.
But like Max, the Gilmores.
They all look like Gilmore carbon copies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just in their behavior, not quite looking like the Gilmores,
but still.
But Max kind of walks up and shakes her hand and introduces himself. I'm Max Medina. I'm Lorelai Gilmore. Blah blah blah. I'll let you get back to
you
it.
Must be Rory's mom.
Yeah. So she goes toward the back of the room where Max has set up some coffee that he's made. She gets a cup and she sits down to join
the parents. She beelines to the coffee, but she almost gags.
So she takes coffee and makes his face. It's hysterical. So when she sits down, they all start talking about the test again, and she asks, you know, where is the test going to be? And he says it's going to be here. And she asks, can parents come to the test?
I love this part.
I know, I do too. The other parents look around at her in bafflement. One of the women, the mothers I guess, turns around and goes, what?
Why?
And somebody else says, why? And there's a guy in there.
It's a test.
And he says,
it's a test. It's not entertaining.
Why would you want to go? You know,
it's not exciting. It's a test.
Yeah.
It's boring.
She asks if he plays golf. And he says that he does. And she says, you explain yours, I'll explain mine.
I love that.
I thought that was the best line.
That's a good line.
That was a possibility for one of my favorite lines.
And he just looks, you know, baffled. And then the other lady's like, she must be one of those.
Yes. One of the mothers looks at another.
Financial aid or whatever.
No, one of the mothers looks at the other and says, that's the one. that voted for the scrunchies.
Yeah, and she must have got here on a scholarship or something.
Yes, but yeah. I thought that was so funny because that's when we find out that the joke she made to Suki earlier about a vote on scrunchies was not, in fact, a joke.
She actually
They were actually having to take a vote on plaid scrunchies.
Because she's just...
I just thought, yeah, okay, that's so funny. Max, at that point, sees the tension rising. He decides...
Let's take a break.
This is a good time to take a break. So all the parents kind of meander out toward the hallway. She stays in there, interestingly.
And he reintroduces himself
and
again.
He, yes, he goes to her, introduces himself again.
Is he just trying to
again.
Get touch her hand and insert himself?
Well,
to more.
Hear Scott Patterson's podcast, hear him tell
it
he did. He was actually starting to get a little angsty over Max Medina in this episode. His inner Luke was coming out for sure.
He did mention, are you a big B-52s fan?
Well, Lorelai takes a sip of the coffee again, and she said, it just keeps getting worse.
And I keep drinking it.
Max is like, well, you don't have to drink it. And she said, not in my world.
Yeah, I must.
Yeah.
You know?
So, yeah, he does introduce himself to her again. I just think that's kind of odd.
Yeah.
He
What's the point, though?
What is the point? You know, unless you're just trying to get another
opportunity. He's working his little whiles there.
So he starts to talk about Rory, and he says she's such a sweet kid. And he asks how she's liking Chilton. And he makes a comment about her wanting to go to Harvard. And he warned her to just, you know, she's going to get there.
How's she coping?
How's she coping with her D?
Yeah.
Lorelai looks shocked.
Out. Yeah, here it comes out. It's like the light bulb goes off.
That Rory got a D. Yeah. Lorelai's shocked.
She discovered Suki's problem.
And
now
she,
it's coming to,
yes.
Now it's coming full circle here.
So she immediately is like, Rory got a D? And he explains it to her, and she said, oh, that totally explains
Rory
the no ice cream thing.
Rory never gets a D.
Rory never gets a D. That totally explains the ice cream thing.
And he's like, he doesn't know what's going on.
Of course he doesn't know
what
that is.
And she's like, I gotta get out of here.
And she tells him, I've gotta go, because if Rory got a D, she's not gonna be feeling too good right now. So after Lorelai says that, we immediately cut over to Luke's diner, where Rory is sitting there studying at one of Luke's tables, and he comes up and drops a piece of pie on the table, and she's like, what's that? And he said, you know, you look like you need pie. He said, violent pencil tossing signals a need for pie, because Rory had just tossed her pencil across the room. And Rory is like, what if I'd thrown a pen? And Luke is like, I'd have brought you a trout, which I thought made no sense whatsoever. I don't know what that reference would be entailing, but, you know, we'll just go with it.
It's funny how he's been in her life so much that he's picked up on she's upset.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's basically been her father.
Yes.
A father figure. And that's just very telling right there that
he
needed to
really
do that.
It really is, because even if she hadn't thrown the pencil, I think he still would have picked up on the fact that something wasn't quite right because of just
And it didn't take him long.
Her demeanor and attitude.
Her mother didn't even pick up on it.
I know. He's very observant.
And what does that say?
I know. It took her mom a while.
Well, she expects Rory to tell her.
Well, that's true.
Luke picks up on nonverbal communication.
Well, and Rory normally does tell her mother everything. This is only the second time that she hasn't. But anyway, so at that point, Lorelai actually does come in, and she tells Rory that she was at the parent-teacher conference.
Wait, before she comes in, she notices that he just gave her pie. And I think it's telling on her part that she acknowledged Luke doing that for Rory.
Yeah, she did.
Because she already knew.
She does make a comment to him about nice backwards baseball cap, you know.
But she saw the pie, and she knew that Luke did that for her.
Yeah.
Without knowing the situation, because she knew already. She just found out.
Yeah.
So that says a lot about her
acknowledging
him.
Well, it says a lot about her understanding of Luke.
Well, her feelings come out much later on. We'll find out.
Yes. But Rory, when she finds out that her mom just came from the parent-teacher conference, Rory kind of looks up at her with this look of kind of
the
dread on
up.
Her face.
She knows.
The gig is up.
Why does she lie?
And I don't know.
She knows it's going to come out.
And she said, why'd you let me whine about about ice cream and stuff and shoes? Lorelai asked her, you know.
Because we tell each other everything.
And she says, I hate when I'm an idiot and I don't know it. She said, I like to be aware of my idiocy, to revel in it, take pics. I feel like we missed a prime Christmas time opportunity. And
hang that up on your mantle, the Christmas card.
I kind of like how Rory doesn't rake her over the coals for getting a bad grade. You know, she knows that her daughter is a serious student, and she doesn't take the fact that Rory got a bad grade against her. She understands what that means to Rory, that it is important, and she just tries to be cheerful and to cheer her daughter out of the mood that she knows she must be in.
I know she's embarrassed, but what did she say? She was humiliated.
She said, I was humiliated. Yeah. Well, first Lorelai says, you should have told me. And she says, I couldn't. She said, you couldn't tell me?
Yeah.
She said, you tell me everything. And Rory said,
evidently not.
Yeah.
Not Dean. Not,
yeah.
Not this.
Well, and at that...
they both start with D.
The Dean and D. Yeah.
There's a connection there.
Yeah, there is a good connection there.
There's a connection.
I definitely agree there. Yeah. But that's when Rory says, it was too humiliating. And Lorelai says, honey, you once told me you love Saved by the Bell. What could be more humiliating than that?
Now I have a bone of contention there.
Yeah, I kind of do too.
I grew up with Saved by the Bell.
Well, I'll let you talk first.
I was that age, okay? Saturday mornings, Saved by the Bell was on. All right?
Well, I was a little bit older. I'm 3 years older than you.
Well,
and so when he was
Do the math, people, or don't do it.
When he was in high school, I was already living on my own and had had my first child.
So are you saying you're a cradle robber?
No. I had my first child at 19.
Okay.
I got pregnant when I was 18, and I had my son when I was 19.
We're not that far off, so I'll give you a pass on that. All right.
So, but I saw Saved by the Bell was on. You know, I would flip channels on Saturday mornings, and I would see it, and what's Saved by the Bell, but I'd never watched it. Yeah. It wasn't until later in life, when I used to have to travel for work, and every morning when I would get up in my hotel rooms, I would want to have something playing on the TV while I got ready, did my makeup, and there was Saved by the Bell on. And I thought, well, I may as well leave it on this channel. And I fell in love with Saved by the Bell.
Flash forward to present day.
Yeah.
And it's on Saturday morning sometimes. And she's like, you have a problem with this on? I'm like, girl, I've been watching that since before you.
I could totally watch Saved by the Bell.
I grew up with this.
I could watch Saved by the Bell over and over and over and over again. The episodes of that show never get old to me.
I wanted to tell Lorelai, I was like, at the time, I was like, Roy, don't be ashamed of that Zack Attack t-shirt you got in your closet.
That's right.
You know, there ain't nothing wrong.
And if you have a buddy band, wear it with pride.
There ain't nothing wrong.
You need to get a buddy band for Lane. There you go.
I'm so excited.
Yes, yes.
And I'm going to break it down like Slater.
Yep. That, speaking of Slater, I just have to mention, I just thought it was so cool that I posted something on Twitter to his feed and he actually liked my comment. You remember that?
You were excited.
I took a screenshot on my iPhone.
You were telling everybody.
Yes.
He commented.
Mario Lopez liked my comment on his Twitter feed.
He seems like a good guy, you know?
He really does. Yeah. If you just watch his Twitter feed, he just seems so humble and down to earth. And man, he does not age.
And I'll tell you what, I really believe he supported Dustin Diamond.
I do too.
And the rest of them are suspect, but he truly was his friend.
He was, yeah, I believe he truly was.
I'm not going to talk about the other cast members.
Yeah.
But I truly believe that.
Yeah, I do
too. And by the way, Saved by the Bell, so it's one of my guilty pleasures, so I'm not ashamed of it, Lorelai.
Mine too. I'm not ashamed of it either. Yeah, I thought that was a very funny line when she said that. So anyway, you know, at that point, Rory basically tells her, I've never gotten a D, ever. She said, even when I broke my arm and she couldn't write, she said, I still got an A-. And Lorelai's like, I know, that was a different school. And Rory's like, well, a D in Stars Hollow is like an F at Chilton. Worse, it's like a J or a W. I suck.
Well,
can't do this.
Let me say one thing. Rory said she's never gotten a D. Well, she's working on getting one already.
Mm-hmm.
Dean.
Yeah.
So that's not necessarily true though.
If you look at it in that context.
Come correct with it.
Yeah. Well, at that point, Lorelai says, basically, self-pity isn't for you. It isn't you. You know, you're made of heartier stuff than that. You can do this. I'll help you. Put this D behind you. And she just keeps going on and on. I really love how positive and uplifting she's being with Rory in this moment. And, I mean, she's basically, hey, we're going to do this. We're going to do it together. And
she's got this defeatist attitude, though.
Rory does. And Lorelai's trying to get her out of it. But here's the thing that struck me, even in this moment, is that Rory's kind of been praised her whole life, and now, you know, she's not living up to that expectation.
This is a test
she's
of her character.
Yeah, she's taking this
tested.
Really hard. Yeah,
but she says, you're stubborn, I'm stubborn.
Yeah,
she's like, no, I'm not. Yes, you are.
Yeah.
I was like, they're being stubborn.
Right, they're stubbornly refusing to admit they're stubborn. Yeah. So the next scene is back at Chilton, and Rory is sitting outside of Chilton on a bench. Some sort of bench.
And then Paris's head pops up.
Yes. And she begins to recite some Shakespeare to Rory.
Yeah, it's like her thespian moment, a breakout moment.
Yeah, it is.
I was like, what is she doing?
Right.
Who does that? Chilton girl does that, I guess.
I guess she's trying to make some sort of a point.
Yeah, she's making her statement.
About, I know Shakespeare inside out, backward forward, you know. And
I've been through the storm. Yeah. And I'm standing. What about you? Because
she's reading Shakespeare. Yeah. If you're not familiar with it, she's reading Shakespeare's sonnet number 116. And it's all about not being love. It's talking about love, but it's all about not being shaken, not bending in a storm. Nothing's gonna move it. And then she looks at Rory and tells her that she's going down.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow,
that's the threat there. And I know you could probably quote the Shakespeare, but I leave that up to you. You know, I'm not a Renaissance man like the movie. I'm not the Bill Rego Shakespeare, you know.
And if anybody is interested, you may have heard that before if you've seen the movie Sense and Sensibility. It's quoted in that movie as well in a very interesting way. So
I did not know
check
that
out. Yeah. okay, so then we flash over where Suki to the kitchen at the Independence Inn, where Suki is making a mad dash back and forth between like a gajillion pots of risotto.
Yeah, she's going off the rail. See, that's what I'm saying. Okay, just go.
Then she gets a waiter to come in who has a goatee, and she immediately starts firing these questions on him, you know, about, you're the guy that waited on this guy that came in to do this. And she's interrogating him, trying to find out who was he with, what was he wearing, you know, was it this guy? She's trying to pinpoint.
She said you had a goatee, and you waited on him, and he's like, can I be fired now?
Yeah.
So she's run him off.
And Lorelai's like, sure.
She's run him off.
So, I mean, that's pretty much the
end. There's more to come.
Yeah, there's more to come on that. So then the next scene is they're at home. Lorelai and Rory are at home. And Lorelai...
the all-night study session.
Yes, the all-night study session. I have a feeling, though, just based on something that comes out in discussion later in the episode, that this is not the only night they've done this.
Oh, no, no.
But Lorelai is quizzing Rory. She's firing questions off at her. Rory is answering them. She's, you know, Lorelai's really doing a great job getting her, helping to get her prepared for this test that's coming up on Friday.
She should have really got some rest like she suggested she do, but
So at one point Lorelai looks up at her and says, you're ready. Yeah. And she said, yep. And Lorelai said, all right, well, let's go to bed. And she said, well, I'm gonna stay up and read my notes a little bit more. And Lorelai's like, oh, okay, well, I'll stay up too.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, you know, you don't have to.
That didn't last long.
But Lorelai, I guess in some form of solidarity for her daughter, decides to stay up. And you can tell it cuts scenes to where it's much later in the evening, probably about
like a time lapse,
1 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. And Rory kind of yawns and gets up and goes into the living room where her mom has fallen asleep on the couch. And she just kind of looks at her for a moment, and then she gets a blanket and covers her up.
This is very telling. It's like the nurturing of each other.
Yes.
They care for each other. One covers one's sleeping, one does
the other. I just think it's so sweet because she covers her up, and then she goes back to studying at the kitchen table. And then shortly thereafter, Lorelai wakes up off the couch, takes the blanket with her where she can see Rory is asleep with her head on the kitchen table. And
Doesn't wake her. Now, here's where we get in trouble.
Yeah, kind of. But it's sweet because she sits down next to Rory, puts the blanket around both of them, lays her head on the table.
Just speaks to their relationship.
And goes to sleep. Yeah. It is precious.
Yeah.
I just think that showing them how they care for each other like that was so
that
sweet.
Was the touching moment of the show.
I do too. And the bad thing, though, is that Lorelai didn't set an alarm.
Well, does she ever?
We learned about her alarm clock. Yeah. But exactly. You'd think that she'd have bought a better clock or at least thought to set an alarm of some sort. Because Rory wakes up the next morning.
The bugle call wouldn't wake her.
No. But Rory wakes up the next morning and she is in a panic because she has woken up late. She wakes her mom up and says, basically, I've missed the bus and, oh my God, what do I do? And, you know, Lorelai is like, mommy can't get up right now. Mommy's been sleeping at a right angle all night.
I like that too.
That's a great line.
I like that too.
But
I missed the bus, and she's like, yes. I can't take you. I got a meeting at 8.
Yeah,
drive yourself.
You drive. Here are the keys. Take the Daisy cell phone.
Jeep and go.
I do think it was interesting that she gave Rory the cell phone, and I kind of thought, okay, this must have been back in the day when every kid on the planet didn't have their own iPhone. No, you know, they didn't have their own phone at all.
I remember having.
So she gives her own
back
phone.
In the day at my age, you know.
But anyway, so Rory does get in the car. She drives. She comes to a stop sign and decides to call Lane at that moment and ask if there are any of her missing notes there because she can't find some and she needs to check something. And I honestly, I'm thinking to myself, really? Y'all have been quizzing all week. You pronounced yourself ready. And if you don't know by now, you don't know it. You know, just let it go and drive to school. You're already late.
I was thinking, what good would that note be at that time?
None.
She just had time to get there and go into class. When would she had to look over it?
Yeah, I don't know. But it's at that time when she's on the phone with Lane that a deer runs out of nowhere with its huge antlers and just smacks right into the side, the passenger side of the Jeep.
I guess there was brush there and he didn't see what was on the other side.
I guess so.
I could see that, but it's unusual for that to happen.
Right, and Rory's freaking out and she's like, I just got hit by a deer. And Lane's like, you hit a deer? She says, no, I got hit by a deer.
You'll see everybody saying that.
Yeah.
But I just want to say, there's a lot of deer in our area and I know several people that hit deers, have been hit by deers. Our son's even
totaled
a few vehicles from that. But that's why I bought this little gadget. It's a high pitch whistle that you put on the front of your car. It's a little plastic piece and it deters them from your path, supposedly. I'm still very cautious.
Well, you've never had a deer run out in front of you, have you?
Well, I've had some close calls.
Really?
Yeah, right down the road.
Maybe it's scaring the deer right at your bumper.
No, this was pre-device. I think it's actually helped.
No, I meant since you've put it on there.
No, not since.
Huh, interesting.
So I think it works because we had them running all over. But
that's true.
You definitely don't want a Tommy Boy, you know, the movie situation where they hit that deer and it wakes up in the car later and it destroys the car.
Right.
Not that I'd put one in a car with me. That's how stupid they were.
Yeah.
And his reaction. You know, I love Bambi and all, but his reaction, like, that was awesome. Come on, man. Total. Sorry about your car, but that was awesome.
That was funny.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Rory's freaking out about the deer. She gets out of the car. She's trying to find it, you know, and Lane is like, put down some salt. Deers love salt. And Rory's like,
she ain't got time
where am I going to get salt?
And she ain't got time for that.
And then she asks, what time is it? And Lane is like, it's 8:40. And she's like, yeah, I gotta go.
Let me tell you, deer are tough, too.
Yeah.
You could strike one, think you killed them. That's like the one woke up in the car. They can get up and take off.
Yeah, if you see a deer dead on the side of the road.
It was a really bad hit. Yeah.
And I hate seeing that. It breaks my heart when I see that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
We have plenty of them around here, though.
So, Rory rushes into class when she gets to Chilton. And when she comes in, and I think she's about 15 minutes late. And Max tells her, sorry, she wasn't on time. She has to wait out the rest of the class in the library.
Snooze, you lose.
And Rory explains the deer accident, and she says, you know, she hit a deer, or got hit by a deer. And Max says, you hit a deer?
Everybody says that. Everybody says that.
And she says, no, I got hit by a deer. And then he starts to look skeptical. And she says that she has, what was the line? She says, I've got antler prints in the side of my mother's car. I know everything about this. You have to let me take this test. And, I mean, I've really kind of felt bad for her because it wasn't her fault.
I think this was the tipping point.
Yeah.
Not being allowed to take the test.
She's had enough.
Her little outburst.
But this is the tipping point that really tips it. Paris leans over and not so quietly whispers to one of her minions, Here we go. At that point, Rory just loses it. And she leans down to Paris and says...
Right in her face
and says, what is wrong with you? You already have everything. The grades and the status. What's wrong with you that you need to be the biggest jerk in the entire world? Max tries to get her to leave at that point, but she is not done.
She keeps it up.
Paris is looking very uncomfortable right now, by the way.
Nobody's talked to her like that before.
And she goes, huh, what's up? What's up, Quippy?
Yeah.
And I thought, oh man, that made me laugh out loud when she said, what's up,
nobody's
Quippy?
Nobody's talked to Paris like that.
No, why so silent, she said.
And Tristan's back there grinning.
So
he's enjoying the show.
Exactly. Max finally grabs her.
He's eating it up.
He drags her past Kristen, who is grinning like a Cheshire cat.
He's got that pencil hysterical. And he's tapping it.
But she stops and she yells in his face. And for the last last time, the name is Rory.
Yeah, she yelled it.
Yeah, she did. But you know what's funny is that I'm actually kind of glad that she did this. I know you're not supposed to act out in class. And as a mother, sometimes I would think, oh my God. But sometimes it is warranted. And I think that she needed to do this for all three of them. For Tristan, herself, and for Paris.
I saw a video of a young man. He didn't feel he was getting taught very well. And he was going off on the teacher. Very well spoken. But he just wasn't having it. And you can tell that teacher needed to be let go, you know, dismissed or something. Because we need more teachers that appreciate that.
Now, if somebody is being threatening to a teacher.
No, he was very.
Or violent toward other students or aggressive.
I'm not condoning
that. In that way, I don't condone that.
Yeah, but he was very well spoken. He had just had enough because he wasn't learning anything.
But in this particular instance, I really think it kind of needed to happen. Maybe that wasn't the perfect place for it to happen. But number one, Rory needed to stand up to herself, to both of them.
But to them, but there are rules and she should have just left.
Paris actually needed Rory to stand up to her or she would have continued to treat her like crap forever.
I'm agreeing with all
Nothing
that.
Nothing ever would have changed. And I think it was good that Paris got put in her place for once by Rory. And then third, I do think it was good that she put Tristan in his place. So
I'm not the goody-goody you think I am.
Exactly.
I got some spunk to me.
I got some fire in me.
But was that the place? I mean, there are rules.
There's not. That wasn't the appropriate place to do this.
And she knew the rules.
But
he explained to them.
It did make for a funny scene.
There are no makeups. He explained.
The day that he announced the test.
Yeah. He explained
the
rules.
He did say there will be no makeups.
And if she knew if you're late, no test. So.
Yeah, but I don't know. I liked it.
It was all compounding. You know, it's all reaching ahead there.
Yeah. So we cut to the Independence Inn at that point. Lorelai is talking to Michelle. And she says, make sure that carpet is replaced perfectly before they go. And he says, okay. And she says, I mean perfectly. Nailed down and everything. And his response back, oh my God.
Was she just going to roll it down and leave it?
He says, oh, you meant that perfectly. I thought you meant the other perfectly. You know, the one that could be misinterpreted by the other Michelle. You know, the one that can understand what you meant by perfectly.
Now we're getting a sense of who he is, really.
You just love
classic,
him.
You know?
And then from the kitchen comes Suki squealing.
Oh, okay, now.
Okay. So
my first impression was she was like Captain Ahab and tracked down her white whale.
Well, she kind of did. She runs in and she tells Lorelai that she found the man's bill. She tracked it down. She said, I figured it out. The critic ordered the wrong wine to go with the risotto. And she starts telling this story about how the goatee waiter only worked one shift last week because he got kicked out by his girlfriend. And Lorelai says, Celia kicked him out. And she says, well, he didn't want kids. And Lorelai said, well, she knew that when he moved in. And Suki said very nonchalantly and very quickly.
Flippantly.
Suki says, women always think they can change men. And she said she's
very... lying.
She said, that's true. That is very true. She said by that, she narrowed it down to the right order. So she knows that she's vindicated.
She's got her mission now.
Yes. Yeah. And at that point, Jackson walks in with produce and she's immediately back to normal arguing with Jackson.
You know what? We'll see. It's going to an unhealthy level here. But we'll see. We'll get there.
But the last part to this scene, I think, is that...
Yeah, this is funny.
Michelle comes in. And he says, there's a man on the phone for you with a funny accent. And Lorelai said, did you guys exchange the secret handshake?
That's perfect right there.
I just thought, oh my gosh.
He's fun to talk. You know, maybe he was talking from somebody from the South.
Yes.
I can see that.
So we're not shown the phone call, but we immediately see Lorelai in the next scene marching into Chilton. And she passes by Rory.
Oh, she's going to handle this.
And she says, I'm going to handle this.
Yeah, let's see
what's
how that
works out.
What's funny
is she asked Rory what happened. And Rory tells her the same thing she's told two other people. I got hit by a deer. And funny enough, Lorelai is the only person that doesn't say, you hit a deer. She actually immediately was like, oh, you know, she just went with it. You know, it's fine. Yeah. So anyway, she said she's going to take care of this. She marches into the headmaster's office and she sits down and he starts to explain to her that, you know, she didn't get to take the test because she was late. And she starts off nice and she says, Rory is always on time. She said, if you check your records, and he says, past performance is irrelevant. And Lorelai's like, but she was up all night studying. She has a witness. I was there. And he says, she's not on trial. And she well, says, Your Honor. Well, Your Honor. Yeah. And he just kind of gives her a look.
Yeah, he's got that little wry smile and like and, grin, you know?
Right. And he starts this huge litany of possible excuses that kids use. Like, after sundown last night, I went blind. My sister took my papers in instead of hers.
Religious
purposes and yada yada.
Forbid me.
And she says, basically, I wasn't trying to make excuses and that's not Rory. And she's you can tell, PO'd though, right that now. She, oh, she's mad. Her eyes are snapping fire. She is not happy.
Yeah, she's getting torqued there.
Basically, he said, rules are rules. She was late. She doesn't get to take the test. He gets up. He goes to the door and he opens it. And he says, we're here to educate. And she says, yes. And I'm asking you to please educate my kid.
I love it when she's like, my God, we're just one person.
Oh, well, I'm getting there.
That's my favorite.
And he says, we will educate her when she's on time. And she says, are you holding that door open for a reason? And she starts going on this fantastic rant that I love, where she basically says to him, we have been up all night studying. We haven't slept. We haven't talked about anything but this school and this test for 7 days.
That's it.
We have stretched ourselves as thin as humanly possible without going completely postal. My God, we're just one person. I thought that was hysterical.
Let me mention this. The going postal, you know, that was that was like the late 80s. I get it was the term, the phrasing there. That's what everybody started using as, I'm going to go postal on you. But actually, it's very serious. There are a lot of killings and such. And I just think we have a lot of businesses around us.
Yeah.
Mailing services that name their company going postal. I just thought that was poor taste.
I do think that's poor taste.
Yeah, that's not dark humor.
It's kind of like it's making fun of the postal workers who were upset and
snap. Yeah. It's dark humor, I get that, but you gotta have some decorum sometime, you know?
Exactly, I agree with that.
But she calls it a rat hole. And
oh, well, she goes on from there. Yeah. She says, well, when she makes the comment, my God, we're just one person, he says, why don't we narrow our field of focus to Rory? And she says, okay, why don't we? And she turns to Max at that point, and she starts to give him an earful, and she says, you sit up here in your snotty little school that's in desperate need of some extra heating vents, and you nurture horrible kids who treat each other like enemies. You set impossible standards that make normal people feel less than anyone else, and you take a great kid like Rory and you tear her apart. And to Max, she says, and you say she's wonderful, she'll be fine, this is nothing, this stodgy rat hole, she calls it a stodgy rat hole, could use somebody like her. And then you completely shut her out of a test that she's been cramming for, that she's ready for, that she completely deserves to take. Max's only reply is to look at the headmaster and say, I didn't call this place a rat hole. And Lorelai's like, no, I added that. And wouldn't want you to get in trouble with Il Duce here.
Yeah, she calls him Il Duce. That's Mussolini the fascist, right?
Yeah, I think so. So I thought that was a funny reference. She said, I thought this place was going to be so great. And I guess that goes on the boy was I wrong list, right above Gaucho's, but just below the flash dance face.
But like, the headmaster is basically like, if it's too hot in here in the kitchen, you need to get out.
Right.
You know, you're jumping out of the frying pan into the fire here, you know.
His next comment is, boy, you certainly like to throw fits in your family. And she's like, well, what do you mean by that? And he's like, Rory threw, your daughter threw a similar fit this morning. And she's like, Rory doesn't throw fits. She's the most even tempered person I know. And he says, well, then she did a lovely impression of you.
She had a bad day.
Yeah, she had a bad day. But so that, yeah, then he goes on to just kind of say, you know, she doesn't have to be here or go to Harvard. Maybe she shouldn't be here.
Good point. And that's a good point.
He says a lot more than that.
He's got a point.
But, you know, maybe
it's too much pressure for him.
I see both sides to this coin.
Yeah.
Those private schools, they are hard.
Very demanding.
They're very demanding. They're very difficult. The curriculum is difficult.
The higher institution level you go, you know.
Well, that's I think I mentioned in the last episode that I went to private schools my whole life until the 11th grade. And
you're paying them to torture you. Like,
oh, absolutely. I will tell you that it took a lot more credits to graduate from the private school that I was in than it is your average public school. So when I left that school, I had extra credits because I had earned so many credits from going to that private school, if that tells you anything.
Yeah, I gotcha.
So, yeah, they do demand a lot from their students. The coursework is, and let me just tell one more story, the coursework is very difficult because I took French when I was there, and when I went to the public school, I signed up for the next level French class. Thank fucking, I'm just going to continue French. And the very first day, I had to go to the teacher and say, I'm sorry, but I know all of this.
Well, let me tell you, in a public school, the AP classes there are like your regular class at a private school.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So you're probably needed to be in like advanced three.
She ended up doing is she kind of gave me a verbal test, and I carried on a pretty good French conversation with her. And at that point, she kind of did some digging. She found two or three other students. I think there were three other students who were a lot more advanced as well. And she made a special class that was higher for fluency. And she made a special class just for us. And I thought that was very nice of a public school teacher to do that. And she probably had to get permission.
They do need a special class because it really got my goat in my Spanish class when somebody who lived in Mexico came in our class and was speaking. Oh, it's so fun. I'm sitting there struggling. Oh, right. that just ate me up.
But anyways. I said all that to say, to make the point that these private schools do absolutely put a lot of pressure on their kids. They make the curriculum extremely difficult. And if a person comes in behind like Rory was, if they don't catch up quick, they can sink. So, I mean, what he was saying to Lorelai was definitely not out of the realm of possibility that you might want to rethink your plans, you know. But I also believe that Lorelai had a point too. So the next scene that we have, we're just going to move right along, is Suki is standing outside of a house.
She stalked her prey down.
She is knocking on the door of the house of the critic.
Yeah, the food
who
critic.
Who reviewed her food. And he opens the door and she said, introduces herself. She's got her back to him. She's not looking at him. And she is holding a plate of risotto and a glass of wine. And she basically says that she wants him to try this dish with this wine. And she'll wait. And that's the last thing we see.
She comments
on it. Oh, she does comment. Are you cooking?
You're using too much salt. Yeah. She's criticizing the food critic.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God.
But then she leaves him to try the dish.
Hopefully she will get back to normal after this.
Well, we never hear another word about this. So I'm assuming that everything went well.
Thing senses her appeased.
Right. So next we cut to Lorelai and Rory. They're on their way home. And when they pass the point where Rory had the deer run into her, Rory wants to stop.
Stop, yeah.
Yeah, and so she gets out and starts running around outside trying to find the missing deer, and Lorelai just makes the comment, I've got heels on, I can't run, and she says, then stay in the car. And Lorelai makes the comment, it's dangerous in the car with all the kamikaze deer going around. But she gets out anyway, and they start walking. And I really love this conversation between the two of them because Rory says that she's tired. She's been studying. This is Lorelai telling her this, that she's tired. She's been studying. She says, maybe you shouldn't be doing this so hard. You need to sleep. You need to come up for air. If she wanted to go back to her other school with Lane, it would be okay with Lorelai. And Rory says, you don't think that I can do it. Lorelai's response is, I think you can do anything, but if you're working too hard and losing it in class, then
we need to reevaluate the situation.
Yeah, we need to worry about that.
We need to take a step back.
And Lorelai's just like, it's just, I can't remember a time when we weren't talking about you going to Harvard. It was just a given, and I'm forgetting where all of that started.
Is this me?
Did it start with
you?
Me?
Yeah.
And she says, you know, was it my dream that you go to Harvard? Because I never got to do the big fancy college thing. Maybe all this time I'm thinking it's for Rory, but really it wasn't. And so at that point, you know, Rory reassures her, this is my dream.
Yeah.
And Lorelai's like, you know, she'll love her either way.
You gotta take a breath sometimes.
Yeah. She says,
calm down. It can't be constant study.
Right.
Yeah.
But Lorelai tells her, I'll love you either way, but if Chilton and Harvard isn't going to make you happy, move on from it. And
that's the difference between her and her parents.
Yes. I love the fact, and I just got to say, I love the fact that Lorelai was willing to self-reflect and think to herself, am I imposing something on her that I wanted for myself and trying to live through her, like you
Most
said.
Most parents won't do that. They're like full war. You're going to play football, son.
I was just about to say, you know, we've all seen those high school
Friday
movies
Night Lights,
where the kid always says, no, I'm not throwing away my dream, I'm throwing away yours, Dad.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That line is in so many movies. But
Chad Michael
actually Murray Chad Michael Murray said that.
What, no, the one?
In the Cinderella story.
Yeah, I'm waiting on the rain, but it's like you it's not gonna come.
He wanted to go to Princeton and be a writer, and his
Princeton
dad wanted
man,
him to play
Princeton
USC.
Girl, yeah.
His dad wanted him to play USC football. Anyway, but so she's basically self-checking right here and making sure that she's not pulling this on Rory.
Right. Is this right for my daughter?
Yeah. Is this right for my daughter? Is this what my daughter... Or am I overstepping my bounds? Yes. And Rory tells her, it's just that, you know, I never caught up. She said, but at this point, Rory's got a smiling, determined look on her face. So her attitude has changed as this conversation has progressed.
Oh, I think it's changed when she had her little outburst. She got it out the chest. She's like, okay, I'm settled down.
Well, she still looked kind of down on the way home.
I think that was the turning point.
But she started to really smile during this conversation.
The beginning of it, yeah. And then her mother assured her it's okay.
Yeah.
And that gave her confidence.
I think that gave her some confidence back because she had lost her confidence a little bit.
Exactly.
But she says, yes, Mom, this is my dream. She said, I appreciate what you're saying and that you're saying it, but she doesn't want to give up on Chilton just yet. And so Lorelai's, well...
Count her out just yet.
And she does thank her for yelling at the headmaster.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought that was kind of...
Did she say it, gentle sir? Something
gentle
like
sir.
That. Yeah.
She
the Mussolini
said,
comment.
She said, I heard you called him Il Duce. And she says, well, she said that stands for kind sir in Cantonese.
At first, I thought she called him douche when I first...
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
I was like, wait.
So now the next scene is we flash to their house and Rory has gone into her room and Lorelai hits the answering machine button. May I just say,
I know what's coming.
I love their answering machine message. It's short, sweet, and it says, we're not here. We have a life. Get over it. And I just think, okay, perfect.
Yeah, they're very to the point.
Yes.
Directed
to the point. So, who is calling is Max Medina. And he says that this message is for Rory.
We got that. Okay, people? It's for Rory.
The message is
Rory. Wrap your brain around that one.
Keep that firmly in front of you that this message
forefront
is for Rory. Keep that in mind. And he says that he talked with the headmaster and convinced him to arrange some extra credit work for Rory to make up for the missed test. And he does warn her that it'll be time-consuming and painful, but he believes that it will work to get her where she needs to be. He tells her very nicely, don't lose heart. And then he says, he does mention the headmaster or Il Duce as he's referred to in the Gilmore House.
Il Duce, yeah. Let me just say right here, I know he might be trying to save time, but go ahead.
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, go ahead.
But then he ends with this. If your mother's listening, Lorelai, it was a pleasure encountering you. I hope it happens again.
Yeah, so let me just say this. Yeah, he's saving time to get the message in, but he's talking to Rory.
Yeah.
He should have said, could you just have your mother call me later? That would have been appropriate. I think he should have gave that to her personally. That's a little cringe-worthy moment for
honestly,
me.
Honestly, I kind of have to agree with you on that because
not the time.
I think that he should have made a separate phone call to say that to Lorelai.
Yeah, or have your mother call me.
Or have your mother call me. I don't think it's right to try to date through a mom's child.
That's not cool.
I think it was just the wrong way to go about it.
Yeah, that's just not cool.
Sorry to all the Max Medina fans out there, but I don't think he played that well. So that's really the end of the episode. And very briefly, we want to touch on Scott's podcast where he interviewed Shelley Cole, who happened to finally be, I mean, we've seen her as one of Paris's minions.
It was funny that Scott referred to her as a mean girl himself.
Yes, he did.
I had already said that two episodes ago.
But she was finally introduced and given a name, Madeline, on the show. So he talked with her, and Mark's got a lot of interesting things.
Did you say what the title of that his podcast was?
The title of his podcast was You Look Like You Need Pie.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you got some stuff to say about Shelley, right?
This was actually her first job.
Which I think is really cool.
Yeah, but you know how old she was? She was 27.
I actually did know that. I had read that. I was shocked to find that out. But even more shocking is I could not believe that Kiko Agena, who plays Lane, that she was also 27.
Yeah.
And at the time, Rory was like, the Alexis Bledel was, I think, 18 or 19.
But a lot of young roles are played by older actors.
Right. But I have to give it to both of these ladies because they aged very well over the course of 7 years.
Good genes.
Very good genes.
Shelley and Scott had something in common. He used to coach acting and now she does.
Yes.
She works out of Peak in Denver.
Yeah, so she's currently an acting coach, and he had explained on his podcast on one of the prior episodes that when he got the job of Gilmore Girls,
he was currently
an acting coach at that time.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going around. We'll get back to that later, mm-hmm, too. Mm-hmm. But she also had never watched the show. This was her first time, too, as well.
Very cool.
Yeah, she was on a show with Scott Cohen, Max Medina, and he was going to play her dad. It was called Men's Room. But it never aired.
Yeah.
Scott brought up a little, they were going back and forth bantering, and he's like, so did you have any crushes on the show? And she's like, sorry, Chad Michael Murray, Tristan, I don't like blondes. I have a thing for the darker haired man. Whoop whoop, that's me. But yeah, she had a thing
for Jared Padalecki, yeah, who played Dean.
But she also had a thing for the two Scott Patterson and Scott Cohen.
Scott Patterson, who plays Luke, and Scott Cohen, who played Max Medina.
And he was going to play her dad, so we don't want to go there.
Yeah, that was kind of funny.
We don't want to touch that subject. But they did some rapid-fire questions.
Yeah, he always asks all of his guests the same rapid-fire questions at the end. And I thought that a couple of hers really stood out for me. One of the questions he asks is, can you smell snow? And there's a reason, of course, that he asks that. It becomes a thing later with Lorelai. The more you watch the show, it'll happen. And she was the first person from the cast that he's interviewed so far that says yes, that they can smell smoke.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of interesting. And then the second thing he asked, one of the things he asked is, what show are you currently binge watching? And she says, I'm usually always down to binge watch The Vampire Diaries. I fell in love with her because...
I think that might be on our list, right?
That is, yes, it is. Because that is one of my favorite shows of all time. I love The Vampire Diaries. So that kind of made me feel closer to her.
You know, Scott mentioned he has his own coffee company. I thought you'd be interested in that. It's Scotty P. Coffee Company.
I will definitely be checking that out.
I know you will. You'll be having me make it, won't you?
Yeah.
I'll be the Luke there. But also, on The Vampire Diaries... Paul Wesley and Ian Somerhalder, or you call him Smolderhalder.
Oh, yeah.
They have their own bourbon company.
Well, because they drank bourbon on the show all the time.
Everything was bourbon.
Every scene, they had a glass of bourbon in hand. And they formed such a close friendship on that show. They're like brothers. So they started the Brothers Bond Bourbon Company.
That's perfect.
Yes. And I actually do not drink bourbon.
I was expecting Salvatore Boys or something. Yeah. But they also mentioned Paris's character.
He asked her what was Paris like to kind of hang out with. And she said, you know, Paris was kind of different whether you were hanging out with her offset or on set. She said when she was on set, she said she was intense. She was that character. So that kind of makes us...
It's a bit of a method actor, almost.
That kind of made us think she was kind of like a method actor. Because she, as soon as she stepped foot on that lot or whatever... place that they were filming at.
The polar opposite of who she really is.
Yes, it is, because in real life, she actually admits that she is kind of shy and timid.
You wouldn't think that.
You would not think that for this character.
Not a Paris, in ways.
One other standout to me on this episode was that through the interviewing process where his team interviewed Scott himself, a little bit of some jealousy started to show over Max Medina.
He definitely didn't like him touching Lorelai.
He did not like him touching Lorelai.
He didn't like the answer machine
either.
I think he agreed with me on that.
He did agree with us.
Yeah.
But he was starting to...
Throw some shade at Scott there.
Yes. And he said, I don't know if it's the inner loop coming out or if it's me, Scott, but...
He kept saying I was up until the night thinking about it.
Yeah. It was funny.
He's more like Luke than he wants to admit. You want to talk about our favorite lines?
Yes.
And scenes.
We're going to do something a little bit different with our favorite line.
We've already coined Gilmoring.
Yeah. We've coined the phrase Gilmoring. Yeah. So from now on, our favorite line is going to be called the Laura line. So instead of saying, hey, what's your favorite line from the show, we're going to say,
what's your favorite Laura line?
What's your Laura line
for
the show?
Yeah, there you go.
Favorite scene is going to be, what's your Rory?
Yeah, Rory
moment.
Yes.
And the most irritating, we're adding this one.
The Emily.
The most irritating or least favorite moment or scene, we're calling the Emily.
Yes.
So, Mark,
what
was your Laura line for the show this episode?
Well, I'm going to go with Suki nonchalantly saying women think they can change men, you know.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to have to go with, my God, we're just one person. Okay. That's just, I love that. I will have to say there were a lot to choose from in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Michelle had at least three or four, maybe, that were fantastic.
Yeah, I just had
Rory had a couple. I mean, I really wanted to give it to Rory for, huh? What's up? What's up, Quippy?
Yeah.
I thought that was fantastic. But, yeah, I'm going to go with we're just one person.
What was your Rory moment?
My Rory, honestly, I think it was the final scene where they are walking through the woods or on the road next to the woods, and Lorelai is self-reflecting and really wanting to make sure that Chilton and Harvard is her daughter's dream and that she's not imposing it on her.
Well,
and the way that they reacted and to each other, and I just love that whole scene.
Right. Well, I'm gonna steal your line for my Rory moment. The whole outburst scenario with her Miss Tess shouting at Tristan, and that was priceless.
Right, yeah, that was
and
good.
And Quippy and all that.
Now, I will say my runner-up for my Rory was the scene where they each covered each other up.
Oh, yeah.
That's an honorable mention.
I did like the headmaster scene, too.
Yeah. All right, what's your Emily?
I'd have to go with that cringeworthy phone tag on her message.
I got to go with that one, too.
Oh, God. That was just some creepish. I don't know.
Yeah, that bothered me, too.
Sorry, Max. You're a good guy and all, but...
Right.
No. Just no. Don't do that.
But don't I will do an honorable mention of I didn't like, at times, how the headmaster kind of seemed to be talking down to Lorelai in that conversation.
That was my other one. Do we want to go over our rating system?
You know what? I say we do that on our next one.
It is coming, Casey. We wanted to get that out there.
Yeah, we are actually. We had been talking about
we're
doing
working
a rating
on something
system.
Special.
Yeah, so you having written in and asked for us to rate
the gun. Yeah.
We had been thinking about it, but you solidified the decision for us.
So we will be doing that in the future.
Yes, it's just that we have gone so long on this particular episode of the podcast that we need to end it at this point. So,
but this one did get high marks.
It did. I would rate this one pretty high.
I only missed the dinner.
Yep. I've missed Friday night dinner too. And more of Luke.
That being said, let's wrap this up here.
Okay, so thank you guys so much for listening to episode 4, Go In, Ready, Set, Stream, season 1, episode 5 for the next episode.
See you then.
See you then.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.